And a warm welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I'm so glad that you are spending time with me today. And I love the last hour. It was really great to have Bob and Cheryl Moeller on the program. And they really were an amazing, insightful couple talking about six hearts of intimacy. Enjoy deeper love and passion in marriage. And if you want to get in the drawing for one of their books that they're giving away, email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and just put six hearts in the subject line. And then make sure you put your name and address if you're one of the lucky winners. We'll know where to send it. All right, this hour I'm joined in studio by Representative Susan Humphreys. If you live in the Kansas area, you may know her because she is a state representative, and her husband, Kerry, is in the studio as well, and a couple of nephews. So this is awesome. I love this. And we're going to talk about what's it like to, at age 53, decide you're going to go to law school and start a new career and then get involved in adoption law and then run for office. Huh, it's going to be an interesting hour. We'll take 60 seconds and be right back. Welcome back to the show. We've got Representative Susan Humphreys and her husband, Kerry, in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah. And Kerry, nice to have you here. Good
thanks.
To see you.
Yeah, pleasure.
As always. So, Susan, great story. I've known you for a long, long, long time. And when I heard that you were going to decide at age 53 to go to law school, that was like, okay, that's pretty cool. Tell me what
really?
That yeah, it was.
Okay.
Tell me what that was like.
So I had thought about going to law school when Kerry and I graduated from TCU.
Mm-hmm.
But he got a job with Cargill, and we started moving, and we had kids, and we got really busy and doing all kinds of things. So then once kids were grown, the thought kind of came back to me. At one point, I was at a class. Our daughter went to the King's College in New York City, and they did a class for the parents at Parents Weekend of constitutional law. And I sat in that class and thought, this is the most interesting thing I have ever studied besides the Bible. And I just said, I want to think about going back to law school. So at that point, I started thinking about it and praying about it and ordered an LSAT study book and thought, maybe I'll look into this. and then we ended up moving to Colorado, where there was a law school close enough that I could actually go where we were living in Kansas before there wasn't a law school. So decided, okay, I'll sign up and I'll take the LSAT and see what happens. And I took it. I made the almost exact same score that I did when I took it 30 years before that.
Really?
Yes.
So that was kind of encouraging, wasn't it?
It was. I was like, okay, I somehow raising four kids and getting lots of gray hair didn't affect my brain too much. But
that's you decided at age 53 you're going to go to law school.
Mm-hmm.
And you were living in Colorado Springs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And driving to Denver.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was about an hour to drive. And that's when I knew I really was going to go, was when I got accepted. I actually got a scholarship. And then they said, okay, you've got to sign up for your parking, and it's $400. And I'm like, okay, I'm signing up. I'm going. I'm going to drive there every day. And it was a three-year program like most law schools. And I ended up loving law school.
Mm-hmm. And did you look at a particular area of law that you were most interested in?
In most law schools, you don't major in a certain area.
Okay.
You take pretty much, especially the first year, all the same classes. But then after that, I tailored most of my classes to things like I took human trafficking. I took every constitutional law class that I could take. I didn't take family law, but I took I had externships with the Children's Law Center of Colorado. I really tried to focus in on children, things that had to do with children and constitutional
mm-hmm.
issues.
And let's talk about your family. And Kerry, feel free to join in on this because you moved around quite a bit.
We did. Yeah, we moved 14 times, actually, leading up to the arriving in Colorado. And so supporting Susan through law school was a small inconvenience compared to all the family transitions she managed over 30 years with Cargill.
Because the 14 moves was your job.
Exactly.
And then, Susan, you said, okay, mm-hmm. now I guess we're moving to Japan or fill in the blank.
Yes, or Brazil.
Or Brazil. Yeah.
I mean, it was always a joint decision. And I'm an I like adventure, so I was pretty much always ready for the next thing. But it was support and caring in his job, mm-hmm. which was a great privilege.
Yeah. So now you get to Brazil, and you've got two children, mm-hmm. and Kylie and Luke, and then all yes. of a sudden you thought, I think we might look into adoption. What was that like?
We got to Brazil, and we knew we wanted to have more children, and we just realized there are a lot of homeless children here. And we at first looked into it, and they said, well, if you don't have a permanent visa, it might not work. But we said, well, we're still going to pursue it. And we went down to the courthouse, sort of like a county courthouse, on a Monday. We filled out a 2-page application that was in Portuguese, and we had lived there about 6 months. So not sure what it really, how well we did. And they called us the next day and said, okay, we think we have a baby in mind for you, and you can come pick her up tomorrow.
The next day?
Yes.
Okay, how do you prepare for that?
This is 21-some-odd years before the law school conversation. We've flashed back.
Yeah, we're flashing back right now.
Well, yeah, we're flashing back 30. That little one we picked up on that Wednesday is now 30 years old, okay, and she was 5 weeks old at the time.
Yeah. So, but in the process, you then adopted another boy.
Yeah. So then
child.
Carrie was getting transferred back to the United States. Cargill was going to transfer us back. And we just said, well, we would love to adopt again if possible. So before we left Sao Paulo, Brazil, we put our name in the hat again. This time it took 2 months, and we were like, wow, why is this taking so long? But then we were able to get our son, Nate. So we got Grace at 5 weeks and Nate when he was about 3 months old, and then moved back.
All right, so you graduate from law school, mm-hmm. and you now really are interested in adoption law.
Exactly,
for starters.
Right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So talk about how you wanted to make a difference in the lives of couples that wanted to adopt kids.
Yeah, so we all know the expense that there is for adoption, and it's just, to me, it's what we really want to focus on is permanence for children. And so how can I do my little part to make permanence for children more affordable and just more accessible to parents? So I now practice adoption law pretty much. That's all I do. It's part-time. But I have a sliding scale, and it's not exactly pro bono, but we call it low bono.
Affordo bono.
Hopefully, you know, but there's still so many. I mean, there's the filing fees, and there's the publishing when you're looking for the birth dad. There's things that do add up, but my legal fees I can control, and I do the best I can to just have them be the smallest possible. And what I tend to do, because it's permanence for kids is what I'm mostly interested in, is some of the adoptions that other attorneys might not be as interested in. Adoptions from foster care or grandparent adoptions or step-parent adoptions, just getting permanence for kids that they don't have it. The infant adoption, there's a lot of attorneys that do that. But I kind of have a bit of a niche where I'll do some things that others aren't as interested in doing.
Because deep down you care about permanence, and there's so many vulnerable kids that aren't maybe that a beautiful new baby that are more easily adopted.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Their story might be a little more complicated.
Yeah. This is going to be a fascinating hour. Representative Susan Humphries, because she ran for office and won. And you're District 99?
Yes.
In Wichita?
Yes.
So for all of you at 88.5 on the digital dial in the Kansas area, you're probably saying, oh, yeah, I know her. Oh, yeah.
I don't think that's what they're saying.
Oh, I think they are. It's my show, and I think they are saying that.
Okay.
All right. We'll take a short break and be back with lots more in just a minute. I've got Representative Susan Humphries and Carrie Humphries in studio. We're chatting about an amazing decision that Susan made when she was 53 to go back to law school. And now she is helping couples with adoption. If you have an adoption question, we'd be happy to take that. But Susan didn't stop there. She decided that she would get into the state legislature. And she's got some encouraging things to say about that. Susan, what was that like?
Well, it wasn't something that was actually on our bucket list. And we had been involved in politics only to the point that we had supported candidates. We had had fundraisers or whatever, but not actually involved ourselves. And then the representative in our district decided not to run again. He was going to retire. And I had several people, five to be exact, because that was the number that I had mentioned to the Lord, that that would be really nice if I got five confirmations. said, why don't you run for something? This makes perfect sense. And then this seat came open, and we prayed about it, and it seemed like we would run. We didn't know if we would win. We felt like God was definitely encouraging me to be the candidate. And so I had a primary that first time. That was the summer of 2016. I had a primary, and it was a pretty difficult primary. We knocked on around 3,000, 3,500 doors. Lots of friends and family helped. Ended up winning the primary, and then I didn't have a general for that November. And then did it all again 2 years later. As in Minnesota, we have elections every 2 years for the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. What's it like going knocking on 3,500 doors?
It's every day. We made a plan. We're going to do it every day from 5 to 8. And
sort of May, June, July.
Yeah.
And we use bicycles some. We would ride neighborhoods, and sometimes I would run neighborhoods.
It was shocking how interesting it really was, and how people don't want to talk that much. I was afraid they would ask me really hard questions, but it was more just to have your representative actually knock on the door with a smiling face and say, hey, here's my card. My cell phone number is on there. If you want to ask me questions, please call me. People are mostly receptive when they answer the door. Dogs are a really big issue because most people can't answer the door because the dogs are barking at their mm-hmm. ankles. But sometimes they'll step out on the front porch. Sometimes we can hear people inside and they don't answer. And then sometimes people just, you know, there's a lot of people not home, so we hang something on the doorknob.
Mm-hmm. So
one time I saw somebody crawling across the kitchen floor.
Seriously? Just anything to avoid this couple.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's hysterical. Yeah. That's funny. So I think that more believers should be listening to this story, Susan, mm-hmm. and saying, ha, get involved in government, get involved and be a decision maker as a follower of Christ. We need more of this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but what you just described seems like a whole lot of work.
Well, it is a whole lot of work, and it is a sacrifice. But I will say it is an amazing opportunity, and it's a responsibility, but it is a great privilege to serve the people that way. And you don't have to be an attorney to do it. You don't have to know all the answers. And especially that first year, I would get in a forum, and they would ask me a question. What do you think about NIAR, which is now, I know, the National Aviation Research Place in Wichita? And I had to say, I don't know what that is.
Well,
it's okay to mm-hmm. say that, as long as you say, but I'll find out, or I can't answer your question, but I'll get the answer for you. And so I would encourage people from all walks of life, the people I serve with in Kansas, all walks of life, farmers, people who have been housewives a lot of their lives, like I was, which is a great thing. I mean, teachers, business people, everything, and everyone has something to offer. So I would encourage people, if they are being nudged that way, to investigate.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about the Kansas, the government in Kansas. Who is the governor right now?
Okay, so even though we have traditionally been a very red state,
mm-hmm.
We do have a Democrat governor. Her name's Laura Kelly. She won last November. The House and the Senate are both Republican-controlled, which makes it a little bit interesting. The mm-hmm. second floor is the governor's floor of the Capitol, and the third floor is the legislators. And so there's some tension between the second and third floor right now.
Okay, Susan, when you look at what's going on in our country in terms of the political discourse and how poorly it's being executed or debated, does it discourage you? Are you seeing it yourself when you go to work? How much people dislike each other and not speak politely to mm-hmm. each other?
So I would say,
or am I just seeing that on the news?
Well, that's the first thing I was going to say, was you cannot, of course, believe everything that you see on the news. And then the second thing I would say is there are amazing people on both sides of the aisle, and I've gotten to know some. That's probably the biggest surprise for me, was the quality of the people that are there. And in Kansas and in other states, they're not there because there's a lot of power or you're going to make a lot of money. We don't. But you're there because it's you get to serve the people and you get to do something that makes a difference in people's lives. So, yes, we don't always agree on everything. We don't. I mean, there are people in the state house in Kansas that I really don't agree on anything except maybe what we're going to name a bridge out in western Kansas.
Yeah.
But it's not what the media is telling you it is, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So what else has been surprising to you as you've served as a state representative? I mean, just what about some of the bigger surprises as you've started to, you know, take on the job, and what caught you by surprise?
Well, first would be just the quality of the people.
Uh-huh.
And then the next thing I would say is how laws are made and how individual events or people or a particular restaurant in one little town wants a law, and how things happen that way sometimes because of one person who's trying to make a difference in the state, one establishment, one business. Sometimes things happen because someone decided to be the squeaky wheel. So I would encourage people to get involved in state government because of that. You can make a difference. I have someone who's encouraging me right now for really important reasons. This sounds crazy, but we need to change the autopsy laws in Kansas because of something that happens with children. And so we wouldn't know about that. But my point is, what's surprising is that people can come from, you know, ground level and make a difference, and you can have things happen, and it's exciting to see that happen. Okay, now if I can just add to that, it's also not easy to pass a law because it has to pass through the committee, it has to pass on the House and the Senate, and then the governor has to sign it. So there's lots of checks and balances.
Mm-hmm. Have you been able to carry any important pieces of legislation so far in your run?
So my second year, I agreed to work on a religious freedom statute, and it had to do with adoption, so that fit right in with me. It gave faith-based adoption agencies the freedom to practice their sincerely held religious beliefs, just the way they had been doing, but it gave them protection so that they couldn't be held liable if they wouldn't serve a couple that wanted to be served by them. It just gave them freedom to keep going and doing what they had been doing. And it was very controversial in Kansas.
I bet. Do say more about that, because tell me what the other side was pushing against.
The other side was saying that this law was, that it discriminated. Of course, it's particularly against, they're saying, LGBT couples.
Sure.
But that the law didn't change anything. There are LGBT couples in Kansas and in every state that are adopting, that are fostering. This did not keep them from doing that at all. There, of all the child placing agencies in Kansas, about 12 of them are faith-based. Probably even only half of those even wanted that protection. So there were many, many places that any couple could go, or singles, non-traditional families, that they could go to be foster parents or to be adoptive parents. So it wasn't keeping anybody from adopting, but it was keeping those agencies afloat, because in Illinois, Massachusetts, now there's a lawsuit in Michigan, Pennsylvania, things are going on where faith-based agencies are having to close their doors because their licenses are not being renewed because they are practicing their faith. And the state has put regulations in place where they can't keep practicing. And
wow.
So they're losing child placing agencies, and children aren't being served. It's not in the best interest of children. And in Kansas, we wanted to protect against that before it happened.
That gets into very scary territory, mm-hmm. especially because it's the kids that are going to be suffering. And when agencies are not getting their licenses renewed because they're being discriminated against.
Exactly.
Or getting sued proactively.
Oh, I bet they're getting sued.
Yeah. There's about 7,500 foster children in Kansas, and it goes up every year as it does, as it is in most states. Some of that we trace back to the opioid crisis and other things, but it's going up, and we need every agency we can possibly have. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're going to serve children best. Let each agency do what they do best. And the faith-based agencies are so often really well-equipped with their families to take the kids that are hard to place, either sibling groups or kids that are, you know, for some reason or another, really harder to place. But the church does rise up and does answer that call.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular bill saw a lot of cooperation between Family Policy Alliance, the Catholic Church, lots of Protestant organizations, and mm-hmm. and won by a single vote in a House of 125 representatives. 63 votes were needed to pass the bill, and that's exactly how many they got.
Mm-hmm.
And the positive, now those agencies can practice their sincerely held religious belief without fear, and in many states, organizations like them are being pushed around.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Sounded like 63 was the perfect number, and they got it.
It was,
talk about an answer to a prayer.
It was an answer to prayer, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have an adoption question, maybe you're thinking about adopting and maybe you're concerned, and you've got a question you would love answered, send us a text, 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. I'll give it one more time, 877-933-2484. We'll take a short break and be back with Representative Susan Humphreys and Carrie Humphreys in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I'm delighted to have Representative Susan Humphreys and her husband, Carrie, in studio. And Susan, when she was 53, after raising her four kids, said, I think I'm going to go to law school and I'm going to study adoption law. And I want to help kids get forever homes. I want to make it affordable. I want to do what I can do. I want to help. And then she also got nudged by God to say, I think I'm going to run for office. And she became a state representative in Kansas and is now in, how many years has it been, Susan?
I just finished my third year in the legislature.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So here's an adoption question. A listener said, what is the first step to adopt? Where would a person start?
I think the first place to start is Google that adoption, and you're going to, a lot is going to come up. And so you're going to be able to go through different resources. Well, okay. Step back, pray about it. That would be first. And then decide, am I interested in adopting from the foster care program in my state, which would be very affordable, and it would probably not be an infant, even though it could be an infant. But adopting out of foster care is very different than doing a private adoption or an agency adoption. So that's kind of the first decision. And then just deciding what kind of child is God calling you to adopt. And if it's someone with special needs, that might be easier. Is it an international adoption? That's going to have its own steps. So I think really doing research, and there are information packets from different agencies. Just if you Google and you start getting information, start sifting through that. Another really great organization is the Christian Alliance for Orphans. Get on that website and start researching, and you can get on, you can have them send you information and start deciding, you know, what you might want to do.
All right, great. There's another caller said, I'm 55 and my husband is 53. Are we too old to adopt?
I would say not at all, but it depends on your state and what agency you go through. And there are certain agencies that have age limits. The foster care system, at least in Kansas, does not have an age limit. So, yes, that would be great. I did a grandparent adoption recently. The grandmother was 67, and she was adopting. It was actually her five-year-old great-granddaughter.
Wow.
And because, you know, the generational, nobody else was going to be there to take care of her. So I don't think that is outside the range of possibility. So look into it.
Mm-hmm. And, Carrie, you said you had a verse that you wanted to share.
Oh, it comes back to our conversation earlier about public policy and
why. We're all over the map today, aren't we? Yeah, I love this.
This is what
happens when you have friends in the studio.
Yeah. You know, just the whole idea of why believers should be in the public square. And Susan and I are reading through the Bible this year, and I was in 1 Kings 15 recently, and just time and time again, it mentioned kings that weren't doing what they were supposed to do. And it said, he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father, and in his sin, which he made Israel sin. And again, a few verses later, like six or seven times in a chapter and a half, it said that the king's evil made his people sin. And it's just a reminder to Susan and I said to her that morning, you know, righteous government is a blessing to the people. And righteous people need to, and when I say righteous people, I mean people clothed in Christ's righteousness, mm-hmm. need to move into the public square for the blessing of the people.
Mm. I love that. If you have a question about adoption, we'd love to take it. It's 877-933-2484. That'd be the text line. We can also take a call as well if you'd like to call and speak to us. That would be wonderful as well. Because I want to talk too about some of the news that's going on in the pro-life world and how the opposition is really stepping up their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Carrie, you had mentioned something going on in Illinois right now that's quite controversial.
It's been a crazy week. I mean, all of us have heard in the national news about the decisions made by the state of New York now some months ago to take abortion rights straight up until the moment of birth. And then Virginia, there was controversy about whether or not live children would be protected by the state. And this past week, Illinois passed an abortion statute, was signed, I think, yesterday into law, more aggressive even than New York's statute. So in New York, if a pregnant woman and everybody at a cocktail party talking to her 8 months pregnant is asking her about her baby and asking her about the baby's name, and everyone knows it's a baby, and she walks out that door and is murdered, and she and her child die. In New York, that child has no protection. It is a non-person. Now in Illinois, mm-hmm. it's a non-person. Mm-hmm. Every kindergartner in the country knows it's a person. And the country is being carved up into states where the unborn are safe and states where the unborn are not safe.
Mm-hmm. Because we've seen the exact opposite in some of the states that have passed heartbeat bills this session. Alabama, Georgia, I think Louisiana's voting on it. So it really is, it's dividing things up. And I want to mention the Illinois law that the governor signed yesterday also took out any conscience protections. So, you know, a doctor or nurse at a hospital is required to do abortions if they do them at that facility. They aren't able to opt out. And so just that whole religious freedom, able to practice your faith at work, we're seeing also divided up state by state, what's going to happen there.
That is, again, shocking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, for years we've talked about religious persecution in places like China and North Korea and Cuba. But there are faithful followers of Christ who are being put in places where their careers are in jeopardy. And mm-hmm. their practice, the work that they love, is in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Susan, I'd love to hear some just adoption cases you've had, because you've gone from helping a family adopt an infant to a teenager to a family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you experienced all of that?
I have experienced all of it. And the thing is, I keep thinking, I've now practiced adoption law for 5 years. I keep thinking, surely this next one's going to be just like another one. I'm going to know what to do. But everyone has some different twist to it. So I would say it's quite common in Kansas, and I'm assuming it is the same in other states. What we're finding now, the infant adoptions, the mothers who are pregnant and are deciding on an adoption plan, it might be their second or third child. It's not the college sorority girl anymore that's getting pregnant. Mm-hmm. I'm not that they're not getting pregnant, but they're either parenting or maybe having an abortion. I don't know. But what we're seeing, the children that are infants that are available to be adopted are often second or third children, fourth children. And mom is saying, I can't keep more children. I can't do this. I'm a single mom. You know, my kids have different dads. I can't keep doing this. My other children are in state custody. I'm trying to get them back. So I'm going to do an adoption plan for this particular pregnancy. And at least half the infant adoptions that I've worked with, moms are testing positive for drugs when the baby's born. And so that's the other issue, that the children that are needing to be adopted are often, you know, it's a little bit harder to place. People go into it. But we make sure, because we know the situation mom is in, we make sure everybody understands the situation they're getting into. And that is not to discourage anyone from adopting. If God's calling you to do it, we should do that. But we should go into it with our eyes wide open, understanding, you know, maybe what mom's lifestyle was while she was pregnant or issues that children might have. It's still, adoption is God's plan. We are all adopted. If we're in his family, we're adopted into his family. And it's his plan, even though sometimes it can be messy. And it's good to understand that, and having two adopted children now that are older. But when they were babies, the word was kind of, oh, if you just love them, this, everything's just going to be fine. But the fact is they have baggage. Even though we got our daughter Grace at 5 weeks and Nate at 3 months, they had 9 months in the womb to be developing and for trauma even. And so it's good to realize that. Good to have a support group, good to get those resources that you need. And now there's so many more resources than there were when our kids were little.
And Susan mentioned CAFO, the Christian Alliance for mm-hmm. Orphans, a tremendous resource. And one thing, Bill, I'd love to just shout out to adoptive grandparents in your audience, mm-hmm. that it is an incredible, we see it, Noah and Deacon are here with us, their grandfather and grandmother, Betty and Roy Murphy in Hot Springs, and our kids, grandparents, Carrie and Margo Humphreys here in the Twin Cities. That role, that grandparent in the life of an adopted child is such a huge thing, because as they're processing through life, life's complicated, issues with parents, everybody has issues with parents. But everybody has a special thing with grandparents. And adopted kids, I think, just sort of are able to look past the tension of parent relationships into a very powerfully nurturing relationship with grandparents. And I just, every time I meet an adoptive grandparent, I encourage them, you are special in the life of that child.
That's well mm-hmm. said. Mm-hmm. It's so true. Mm-hmm. I mean, the connection between kids and grandparents is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, our son Nate, our kids went to Central Christian Academy, a little Christian school in Wichita. And when our kids would do their family tree, they connected into the Murphy and Humphreys family tree without second thought.
Mm.
You know, so biologically, they were part of a different family tree. But adoption placed them in the Murphy and Humphreys clan, and they identified themselves as Murphys and Humphreys without a second thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. All right. I'm going to take a little break, and if you have a question, let us know what it is. If you have a question about adoption, 877-933-2484. Representative Susan Humphreys and Carrie are in the studio. We'll take a short break and be right back. Show. and Representative Susan Humphries and her husband, Kerry, in studio. And let's talk, we're talking adoption, but Susan also is in the representative in the state legislature in Kansas. And that's in Wichita, right? Is that the headquarters?
No.
I'm sorry.
The capital of Kansas is Topeka.
Topeka. I knew that.
Everybody knows Topeka, right?
Of course. Don't make me look bad in front of my listeners. I know Topeka. Of course.
It is the home of Brown versus Board of Education.
It sure is. Yeah. Uh-huh. Very important Supreme Court decision.
Yeah. So let's talk about how absolutely important it is that Christians get involved. We were talking about a contest where the person won by 7 votes.
Yes. I mean, it's crazy. So in Kansas, there's 125 representatives. I think in Minnesota, we just came from your beautiful state capital, actually. We toured it before we came over here to the station.
Kind of a bucket list item for us.
Nice.
Yeah. And you have 134 representatives, I believe. And I would just say, what was the question again?
About the importance of the individuals getting involved.
Getting involved. So I would just say, that's right, the voting is probably first, because I do have people I served with. There is one person from Western Kansas, a woman I actually sat next to her on the House floor. They had a recount 4 times, because the first one she won by 12 votes, and then they did a recount. It went down to something like 5 votes. Then they did another recount of all the provisional ballots, and it ended up, it was just, you know, single digits practically. And so I would encourage everyone, your vote matters. And you may go, it's just state politics. But most of what affects you day to day, it happens in your state. We talk about the federal government all the time. But what affects you most are these state laws, and your legislators are making them. So I would say vote. I would say contact your legislator. It really does make a difference. I mean, this is just a guy I talked to today. He texted me and said that he was having trouble with the Department of Labor getting his unemployment compensation. I called my legislative liaison over at that agency and hooked them up immediately. Like, that we can do that for you. So I would say, if you're having an issue, do contact them. And then the other thing I would say is, it is amazing. We have an incredible prayer network at the Kansas State Capitol, and every legislator has someone across the state that is praying for them in this big prayer network. And there are people sitting around the Capitol. We almost know who they are because they maybe have a Bible in their hand, but they're sitting all around the 5 floors of the Kansas Capitol, and they're just there to pray. And
wow.
They're there, a few of them every day. And the importance of that, we've seen legislation just pass by a thin margin. And I think it's because prayer is making a difference in the state.
Yeah. So when someone contacts you, tell me what the tone is that they usually come across with. Are they friendly and nice, or are they all determined? I'm finally going to talk to my state representative, so I'm going to give her a piece of my mind.
Kind of a funny thing is, I put my cell phone number out there all the time on every piece of literature. I rarely have anybody call me, but I think most people are like, wow, she's giving me her cell number, but they don't call. And I would say I've gotten most people are encouraging. I try to send out an email newsletter, let people know what's going on. I've got maybe 2,000 people on that list almost. And I would say, of the ones I've gotten back, all are positive, but then a few of them say something like, you are exactly the kind of person that I'm trying to get out of government. So I take that with a grain of salt. But I
remind Susan that she won in her last election with 2/3 of the vote, so 67% to 33%. And I remind her that's the poll she really needs to pay attention to.
Yeah.
It's that she was sent there by a large majority of her voters, and she made it really clear who she was and what she stood for. And so she just needs to go live it out, and she'll show up again in 2 years. I used to think every 2 years is kind of ridiculous, and how often people have to campaign and what a waste. And now I realize, being up in Topeka, because I work mobily, and so we're there in Topeka together, a couple hours from our home, and I realize people are legislating differently, knowing they're up for election in 2 years. I mean, it's important that every 2 years people get an opportunity to recall that legislator and say, mm-hmm. no more of you, you right. know? And so it's important. The other one thing I would say mm-hmm. is, I think 40 states now have organizations that are affiliated with the Family Policy Alliance mm-hmm. out of Colorado Springs. Minnesota Family Council is an awesome organization. We have one in Kansas with a similar name, but just they're a great resource for citizens, and they're a great place to give because they get active in St. Paul and work legislation and surface things that need to be heard. And
Yeah. So that would be another thing as far as getting involved is be informed of what's going on in your state legislature through those organizations. And then I get a lot of cut and paste emails, and I know they're exactly the same, and I try to write everybody back, and it's a cut and paste reply.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get an email that is truly, clearly just someone writing from their heart, I send them back an email that way. I answer texts, I answer Facebook message, I try to answer whoever, and I would just say, if you really have an issue, contact them personally. Contact your senator or your representative personally. It's helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Susan Humphreys is not only a state representative, she's also an attorney and does a lot of adoption law. The question is, when it comes to adopting an international child, do you run into corruption in government and procedures that would otherwise not happen in the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. That's from one of your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a really good question. So there's been a lot of protections that have been enacted recently. We talk about a country being a Hague country if they have joined in the Hague Agreement, which has high standards on those sort of corruption things. So if someone is wanting to adopt internationally, you might want to check and see if they have joined in, if they're a Hague country
okay.
or not. So that's one thing. And then I would say you hear of the horrible situation, but that is by far and away the rare thing that happens. Of course, we always hear about the corrupt thing that happens. But the other thing I would say is if you're going through an agency, check. Do all kinds of, look at their references, call people that have used that agency. Find out, if they're reputable and the kind of organizations and orphanages that they have relationships with in the other countries.
Mm-hmm. From the time a person decides they would like to mm-hmm. adopt, what is the gestation period? When do they get the idea? When does God lay it on their heart that, we should adopt? Is it a year? Is it 3 years? How soon does it usually, when people come to you, Susan, how long have they been praying about it?
Well, it varies widely.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had an adoption that came up in February. A woman had a baby, but I had, and she wanted to do an adoption plan. She had a couple in mind that she had met. I happen to know the couple. And they called me and said, hey, this woman just had a baby. We're going to take the baby home today. And we finalized in May. So they went from praying about adopting in February to having it finalized in May. That is highly unusual, but that was because the woman chose them specifically. Now, if an international adoption, now I think China, the average wait is 4 to 5 years.
Wow.
Even. And if you're willing to take children with special needs, much shorter. If you're going to go through the foster care system, children are adoptable right away. Or you can start fostering, and you can do foster to adopt, and that might be several years before the parental rights are terminated if they don't reintegrate with the family. So it really varies widely, and it varies what kind of adoption mm-hmm. you're going to do.
And, one of the things that's important to mention, a lot of churches have orphan ministry mm-hmm. areas where they've really just decided to step up and get organized as a church and bring resources to bear, maybe create some scholarship funds for families that want to adopt. Stephen Curtis Chapman started a ministry years ago that's still active called Show Hope, showhope.org, where people can get some of their adoption financial needs met. But lots of churches do that as well. And the Christian Alliance for Orphans has a whole thread through that movement, and they have a conference every year in May helping churches start orphan and adoption ministries.
Mm-hmm.
The church has really taken off in this area.
Definitely.
And focus on the family has been helpful to that number of organizations.
So as parents who have adopted two kids, talk about that.
It's awesome. I mean, we have two amazing adopted children. All four of our kids are awesome, and it's fun to watch them. You know, as you go through life, and kids always get, you know, testy with each other at different stages of life, but we've watched our kids do a lot together over the years, moving, international moves, different things that have caused them to knit their hearts together. And they're super close, and it's fun to watch them go even deeper together. Susan talked earlier about the fact that it can be messy and complicated, but they are precious, precious kids.
Mm-hmm. And everyone is different. Our two adopted children, one of them wants to talk about being adopted and wants to know more. And she did 23andMe so that she could understand maybe a little bit of her heritage, because we don't know much about it. And then our other child that's adopted, he doesn't want to talk about that at all. He's like, I belong to this family. It doesn't matter to me at all what happened before. So I think just realizing, too, that every child is going to handle things differently. And it wasn't always easy. And it wasn't always easy with our, you know,
born to us
kids. We call them our natural kids and our supernatural kids.
I have a little thing. I don't know, Bill, if this resonates with your listeners, but I meet adoptive parents, and they talk about their natural or their biological kids and their adopted kids, and my heart just kind of breaks over that. It's like we're all biological, for crying out loud,
right?
You know?
Exactly.
So we refer to our kids as our either supernatural and natural, or two children born to us and two children adopted into our family.
Yeah.
But it's been a delight.
Yes.
Well, it's been great having you in studio, and I want to say a special thanks to Representative Susan Humphreys and her husband, Kerry, and also want to say a big special hello to Kerry's parents, Kerry and Margo, who I hope are listening right now.
I think they are.
Yes. And if you exit the building here at the University of Northwestern, the Mel Johnson Media Center, where we are at, you will see the plaque the day this building went up, and your dad's name is at the top because he was chairman of the board at the time of the school. So, and here we are today. How nice is that?
Yep.
That wraps up our show. Thanks for listening. If you missed any of it, go to myfaithradio.com. You can check out the Afternoons with Bill show page and catch anything you might have missed. As you lay your head on the pillow tonight, just know that God is working out his great story in your life. Have a great night, everyone. God bless. I'll see you tomorrow.